Funerals in a pandemic, grieving in a time of social distancing and caution. Funeral rituals are as old as humanity. We come together when we've lost someone, to remember them, honor them, and to be with one another for comfort and understanding. But during the COVID pandemic, everything has changed. Services either happen virtually or with just a handful of people. There aren't hugs or even handshakes. People can't travel to take part in a service. I'm Jennifer Rooks. For those in the funeral industry, this has been a challenging time as funeral directors try to find safe and meaningful ways to conduct services, cremations, and burials, and to comfort those who are grieving. Have you been through the experience of a funeral during COVID? How did it affect your family? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The pandemic has disrupted so many aspects of life, including the end of life. The way that funerals are conducted has had to change, with COVID guidelines making an already difficult time even harder. We're going to talk about these changes today. My guest, Jim Fernald, who is funeral director at Brookings Smith in Bangor and spokesperson for the Maine Funeral Directors Association, and Doug Bibber, who is vice president of Bibber Memorial Chapel in Kennebunk. We invite your questions and comments. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Jim and Doug, thank you so much for joining us today. And Jim, I'll start with you.
Thank you.
I can only imagine how and how many ways your industry has changed. I'm thinking about people not being able to travel to come to services, not being allowed to be in the same room together. That's just the start, though, isn't it?
It sure is. It's gotten very complicated to try to just meet with families and to go right there. All of these little steps along the way, I think, help with the healing process for families. And what I mean by that is if we go to a home or a nursing home, one of the first things we do is take a loved one from, you know, that place of passing into our care. And so many families are missing out on that. They're missing out on being bedside sometimes to be able to say goodbye to their loved one. We're limited to how many people can make arrangements the next day, which is also just another little piece of experience for people to grasp the reality of death.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. When you say make arrangements, so when you're sitting in your office and talking about what will happen next, only one or two people can be there with you.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And sometimes we do it over the phone. Yeah. A lot of times when people come through the door, that is a, you know, I don't know how many tears have been shed right there, because I think that's, it's like, oh my God, I'm here to make arrangements for my mom or dad or whoever the loved one would be. And I think all these little pieces along the way are part of that, you know, are the start of that healing process to try to grasp the reality of the passing, you know. So, and then you get into an actual memorial service itself, and you can't really have a big service right now. Our guideline is 50 people for a gathering, and that's really not that many people for a lot of these big families here in Maine.
Mm. And Doug, as I listen to Jim and as I think about this, I think, what is a service and what is a memorial when people can't give each other hugs?
You know, the hug is the most important tool that I have when I come into the presence of a family that's had a death. And quite honestly, when the state first shut down almost a year ago now, one of the first calls that I responded to was for somebody that I've known all my life. And they lost their son. And I had to say to our friend, you know, I can't give you a hug. I'm sorry. That was a gut punch to me. As well as them, we've all had to adapt this past year, from having services in the funeral home or at church or out on a village green to not being allowed to be with closer than 6 feet, and folks not wanting to gather because of fear of contracting COVID. We've had to adapt and find new ways to bring meaning and support to the family. And it's been a challenge. It involves having discussion with the families and finding out ways that we can bring meaning to their loved ones' services. One of my very first time that we assisted a family with a Zoom service, the funeral director, Brad, who was helping me with the technology aspect because he's better at it than I, he and I were the only people attending that service in the funeral home building proper. The minister was in his house in New Hampshire. A couple family members were here in Kennebunk in their own houses. And then family members were in New York and then Brussels and France. And that's how the service flowed for that family. It was kind of surreal from my perspective because it was just so unique. But then after the service, we left that link open, and for the next 2 to 3 hours, they just shared through Zoom. So it was eye-opening, and we said, okay, this can work for some families. So it's a matter of finding out how we can adapt to each family we serve.
Mm-hmm. Jim, I'm thinking about early on in the pandemic, and one of the very earliest super spreader events was a funeral in Georgia. That must have really sent a shiver through the entire industry to realize that something that you all take such pride in doing well and doing with meaning, and it was all going to be turned on its head.
It really did. It turned our industry pretty much upside down because I think it was March 15th of last year into, I think, the 1st of June here in Maine, and the governor adopted some guidelines where it really shut down to, I think we could only have 10 people present in the building until from that time period. And that was just so difficult for families. You know, I mean, it was difficult for us, but I really reach out to the families not being able to have the community support that they so much need during such a time. And the other part that we experienced through that is that there are so many postponed services. So we have this big lag of time between, you know, it's been months. And as a matter of fact, I have probably another dozen people that passed before March of 2020 that still hasn't done a service. They're still waiting for some kind of for us to get on the other side of this COVID, so to be able to make travel plans and to come to Maine and as well as to try to get people here was very difficult with quarantine periods of time, as well as you know, some states were allowed, some were not allowed. And as a matter of fact, our first two COVID deaths for us here in Bangor, anyway, were people that passed away from out of state, from Boston, that we had to bring to Maine into our care. And so that was a little difficult there, too, to get them back. And as a matter of fact, they were both of Jewish faith. So one of the situations we ran in with the Jewish community is they have a committee called the Hever Kedisha that do the washing and anointing of the remains, and they use our facility to do that. But due to COVID, we've shut down all of that. So they had to pass on their traditions that we as licensed professionals could do so that we could provide some kind of service for them. And those two cases was graveside services.
So many questions from what you've just said, Jim, but let me ask you this. Doug had mentioned using Zoom and doing virtual services. Jim, you've mentioned people postponing services. Yes. When COVID is over and when we get back to normal, are you worried that you're going to have a hard time catching up?
I'm very worried. You know, here in Northern Maine, anyway, we're very used to having what are called spring burials, where you know, the passings may have happened in the wintertime. Usually people have some kind of service still, but we aren't able to do burials because of the cemeteries are closed. So for years, we've been doing this up here in this part of the state. But this is another whole thing where people aren't having any service at all. They're postponing for months, and I just think it's such a delayed grief reaction. So, yes, we're concerned about being able to handle all these cases, and just the way it goes sometimes, everybody wants to do a service on a Saturday, and we aren't going to be able to do that, I don't think. We are worried about it. We've actually tried to bring on new staff and train them, and for us internally too, we relied for years on retired folks that could come in and help us, people in their 70s, maybe 80s, but due to COVID and their high risk, that we've lost that whole piece of staffing, and these are people that know a lot of people in the community, so we've brought on newer folks that are younger and we're doing a lot of training and trying to prepare for what's going to be coming up.
And, Doug, let me ask you, Jim was talking about the two services he had where he was preparing the body, the licensed professionals were preparing the body. And I'm wondering, just that step of the process for you with COVID, if somebody has died of COVID, what did that mean for people in your industry? Did you have to take precautions that you would not have had to take before COVID?
Well, we certainly were heightened to caring for everybody that we care for. It reinforced what we learned in the late 80s when AIDS came onto our cognizance. Out of the AIDS epidemic, we came up, the health field came up with universal precautions, and we come under that, where we wear physical barriers and masks and shields when we're caring for deceased, and gloves and a set of protocols when we're caring for them, to keep us as safe as possible. So we had that to hang our hat on in saying, okay, we've really got to drill down and be aware of this and get back to making sure we're operating as safely as possible. Because we were able to, you know, families that had a loved one die of COVID and wanted that opportunity to view and say goodbye, we were able to give it to them. So we're very thankful for that. But we certainly did it in as safe a manner as possible.
Calling in now, Tony Antolini, who is president of the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine. Thank you for joining us, Tony. And tell us about your organization.
Oh, thank you for having us on. Our organization is kind of an informational body. We do not advocate for any particular cause. But we have a website, Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine, where people can find out a lot of information about death and dying. We are currently finding many people going to our website or calling our phone number, asking questions about their options. And your two guests have really covered most of the immediate problems that people face when losing someone. There's very little I can add to this, except that I am a church organist, and I can tell you that the lack of services at my church has led to some very interesting experiments. We had the death of one member of our congregation, and the relatives held a virtual funeral using a virtual funeral service online, and of course I didn't play any music for it, but I found myself in the position of having to recommend what recorded music they would like for this service. So my work in the church has certainly changed, and we're getting an awful lot of calls and hits to our website with people asking questions. We also are a source of information about different kinds of burial options besides cremation.
Mm-hmm.
So people often reach out to us to learn more about where they can get such information.
Right. And I wanted to ask, Tony, I know that there's been a trend to doing home burials, doing alternative funerals. And I'm wondering how the pandemic has affected that. Are more people turning to that or fewer because of the concerns?
I think more people are turning to it, or at least from our perspective, they're asking questions about how to do it and what's legal. Most of the questions that are asked of the Funeral Consumers Alliance are, what am I allowed to do? People seem to have a very vague idea of what is legal in Maine or in other states, and they're surprised to learn that certain things are allowed that they assumed were not, such as burial on their own property. Of course, there are legal ramifications to that, but it is possible to bury a loved one on one's property. It is possible to have funeral arrangements done in the house, things of that sort. As I said at the beginning, we don't advocate for any particular thing, and we do try to make people smarter about what their options are. One thing we have noticed is that people often now are making more arrangements for death than they were before. The effect of the pandemic has been, I think, to make people more aware of their own mortality or the mortality of their family members. So we get more questions about, how can I plan for this? It's made people a little more bold in facing this reality.
That is really an interesting insight, Tony. Thank you so much for calling in. Tony Antolini is the president of the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine. And Jim, before we go to a break, I want to ask you about that. Is that something you are seeing as well, that more people are taking the time to plan and talk about end of life and funeral arrangements in a way that maybe they put off before?
Well, he brings up a great point. He's exactly right. We've taken more calls and sent out more information, I think, this year than we ever have. But to go back to it, it's hard to meet. Some of these people don't want to meet. So we've dropped packages off of information on people's doorsteps back during the probably like a year ago after the big push of COVID. But the expression I heard from a lot of families was, they were watching the news back then and what was going on in New York City with, the big trucks with the bodies stacked in them and the mass burials and all that. And they knew that they did not want to do that, and that by having a connection with a funeral provider and having a plan in effect was very important to them. It gave them peace of mind knowing that hopefully we'd be able to follow through with their wishes, depending on where this whole COVID issue was going at the time. So that has been a big push for sure.
Well, we're talking about end of life and funerals in the time of pandemic. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post a comment to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Oceans Wide, restoring the former sardine carrier Pauline for education and exploration in the Gulf of Maine. Learn more at oceanswide.org. And Owl Furniture, made in Maine, ergonomic sit-stand work solutions for home and office use, owlfurniture.com.
President Biden's relief plan would mean a lot of money pumped into this economy in a pretty short window, and some are worried about things overheating. So what do you suppose happens if it gets really hot?
The first thing that you're going to see is, when you go to the grocery store, those prices over the course of the year are going to rise more rapidly.
I'm Kai Rizdal. A look at the long-term risks. Inflation is the word you're looking for, next time on Marketplace.
And join us for Marketplace this evening at 6:30. And join us here on Maine Public Radio this evening as we bring you Governor Janet Mills' 2021 State of the Budget Address. Hosted by Maine Calling's Jennifer Rooks, the broadcast will begin at 7 and be available for viewing on Maine Public Television and at mainepublic.org. Maine Public Radio will also offer a rebroadcast of the address Wednesday afternoon at 2. That's Governor Mills' State of the Budget this evening at 7 on Maine Public Radio, television, and mainepublic.org, and rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon at 2 right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're discussing the pandemic's impact on funerals and how they're conducted. Joining me, Doug Bibber, who is Vice President of Bibber Memorial Chapel in Kennebunk, and Jim Fernald, spokesperson for the Maine Funeral Directors Association and funeral director at Brookings Smith in Bangor. If you'd like to share your comments or questions, tell us your story. You can do it in an email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling. Post a comment to our Facebook page or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is the Reverend Carolyn Lambert, who is Vice President of the Maine Council of Churches and pastor at Torrey Hill Congregational Church in Buxton. She works with area funeral homes as well. Thank you for calling in, Reverend Lambert.
Thank you for having me, and it's a great conversation to be having both between you and I, but as well for the public.
What has it been like for you as a minister dealing with funerals over the past year?
I'm sure that you've heard this with the folks that you've already spoken to, but it seems as if almost everything that we do and that we can do has had to change. We certainly had to abide by all the guidelines that we were hearing from the state, and those just in themselves have wound up by changing things. But the way we meet people, the way we comfort people, the way we walk with them through their grief has all changed from even before somebody has actually died. I often will tell people that I find the time when somebody is taking their final breaths, whether they're at home or whether they're in a hospice home, can be one of the most spiritual times that I ever experience in my ministry. And often I have the opportunity to sit with a family, and we hold each other's hands even as somebody is taking that last breath, and it's such a deeply spiritual moment. And we can't do that now. And I'm sure you know that even families don't even get to see their loved ones oftentimes. They might not have been able to see them for weeks, maybe even for months. They haven't talked to them. They haven't touched them. So everything has changed from the very beginning.
And is that what you found to be the hardest part of all of this?
The hardest part is not being able to walk with people through their grief process. And I think that that's difficult, not just for me in my position or for my friends who are funeral directors. It's also really, really hard for people who are experiencing the grief process. And I often will say that everybody needs to walk all the way through the grief process, and it's different for everybody. But if we don't walk through that process, then it winds up by coming back to bite us later on, usually in really unhealthy ways. I often will talk about that silly game that they play, that my kids played when I would take them to Chuck E. Cheese, that whack-a-mole game. And that's what happens with grief. You whack it in one place, but it pops up in another if you don't really walk through it. Mm. And I'm seeing how difficult that is for people today.
What have you found gives comfort to people when you're not able to give comfort in the ways that you've been trained to and you're comfortable doing?
Well, I'm sure that you've also heard that we're using Zoom a lot more than we ever used before, and sometimes I can have conversations with people on Zoom. I talk to people on the phone, even if I can't meet them in person. During the summer months, it was easy to go to somebody's home and sit with them because we could be outside, we could be safely distanced, we could be wearing our masks. But at this point, I don't think it's very comfortable for any of us to be going to each other's homes or sitting in person. When I meet with a family before a funeral, we usually will meet at the funeral home. And we once again, we're distanced, but whereas in the past, there might have been 10 or 12 or even 15 people that have gathered, and I gather them just to tell so that they can tell their stories, because I think that that's the initial part of the grief process, is celebrating who that person has been. Mm. We can usually only meet now with one or two or three people. So we're just trying to make up for that in making contact in other ways. And it might be sending cards after the service or making phone calls after the service. I always make sure that people have every way of being in touch with me, whether it's my cell phone or my landline or my email address, so that after the service they know that they can find a way to get in touch with me. And they often do.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling in. That was Reverend Carolyn Lambert, who is pastor at Torrey Hill Congregational Church in Buxton and vice president of the Maine Council of Churches. We're going to turn now to Julie, who's calling in from Bath. Hi, Julie. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm from Bath, and about a year ago, it was coming on to a year that my mother passed away on March 11th. Mm. And it's been quite a roller coaster of a ride. Fortunately for us, we were able to, you know, COVID hadn't quite hit. It was just at the beginning. My mom had been in hospice since September of 2019. And up until that time, I was able to be with her. Very fortunate for me. I feel very blessed to have been there with her and to help her, my husband and I. Sorry, I'm getting emotional because it's coming on to an annual. But one thing that I wanted to point out was that patience in celebrating and honoring your loved ones is really important. My mom and I were able to go to the funeral home in August of 2019 because we knew she had a terminal illness and prearrange everything. It was just wonderful where we did in Bath. It was at Desmond's. And she now is, she was cremated and is now in our home. And it's wonderful and comforting to have her here, but it's not what she wanted. When she passed, she had expected to, you know, have the traditional ritual church service. She was a member of the First Parish Church in Brunswick, and I'll tell you, everybody there has been very supportive and wonderful. Our church family is great. Chans, who is the hospice service that worked with my mom, was also wonderful. But it's really my patience in knowing that eventually I'll be able to honor her.
Mm. And Julie, you're planning to have a service when you are able?
When we're able. Right now, we tentatively have one for May 22nd. And we have our family invited and her close, close friends. She was 83 when she passed, so she has quite a few wonderful friends that are still alive and want to celebrate her, as well as her family. She was just a wonderful, wonderful human being.
And that way you can have it, in theory, outdoors if you have to.
If we have to. But if, you know, we're patient and we just, that's where the roller coaster comes in, that if it's not safe, then we'll delay it. And just delaying services is, you know, it's hard for us who are left behind. I know my mom's safe and in a good space, you know, but it's really those of us that are left behind that are dealing with the non-traditional sense of what in the rituals that we're so used to having for a funeral service. We have to deal with that. But it is what it is. We've also lost two other family members too, out of state, not due to COVID, but and so I've experienced Zoom funerals too. They're wonderful, and it's a blessing to have, but I'm not judgmental here, but that's not what I need.
That's not what your mom wanted, right. Julie, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. And Jim, I'm guessing that Julie's story is unfortunately not uncommon.
It's very common, absolutely. And sorry for what she's going through. It's just to postpone and wait. And I've had several families that have scheduled a service two or three times, and you can see the emotion on their faces that they just would like to kind of get it behind them. I've always put the memorialization as a bridge, and it's a bridge between the life that when you had that person with you, and now there's a new life without them with you into the future, and the memorial piece is the bridge that kind of connects that, and for a healthy grief process or healing into the future, I just think that's such a must do. It doesn't have to be a structured type of an event. It could be a celebration or life, or just a gathering at a local pub or something. But to have that time, I just think is key. And if people don't do it, I always say they're probably going to fall off the bridge, you know, that they aren't going to be able to go forward in a healthy way.
Julie, well, good luck to you. I hope May 22nd works, and I appreciate your call. Calling us now, Imam Ahmed, who is Community Services Coordinator Assistant for the Maine Muslim Community Center. Thank you so much for joining us. I know that the Muslim faith carries out certain customs when someone dies. Tell us what a typical funeral would involve before the COVID pandemic.
Hello to Jennifer and everyone from the listeners. My name is Ahmed Abdurrahman. I'm the assistant imam. I'm the community coordinator. As a profession, I work as a respiratory therapist. So I was working both sides, and I was one of the burial coordinators. So on a normal non-COVID world, when a Muslim passes away, you will do the burial as soon as possible, mostly within 24 hours. There is a ritual washing of the body, cleaning, and then dressing in a special ritual way, and then burial within 24 hours. And you know, a lot of community members coming together, you know, praying for the deceased, kind of condolences sharing. That is the ritual. That is the normal way. With COVID, things have been very different.
How hard is it for you and for others if, for example, you are not able to bury within 24 hours?
It is very hard. Before COVID, sometimes, you know, we'd have to wait because it's the weekend or because there is a storm. That has always been like a very uneasy time for us who manage the funerals. But the most challenging for us during COVID was, number one, families have the challenge of not being able to see the patient in the ICU because of COVID. So they have already suffered that emotional trauma. And then when the body the patient is deceased, and then the rule says, you know, you can't touch, no washing. They come in with a special bag, and they come to you as an imam saying, Imam, you know, what can I do? Is this enough? It's so emotional, and I have never been changed by anything more than this services. You know, there is a guidance in the religion that you protect the living person first, but still many, even though they listen to the imam, this is acceptable, this is what we can do, is still you can tell to them they feel like they haven't done enough.
Mm-hmm. Ahmed, have there been many COVID-related deaths in your community?
Thank God, no. I'm, you know, pained by any death of COVID, especially to me. I was working in the ICU, so I have witnessed quite a bit of deaths. But specifically in the Muslim community in Maine, it was very small. I would say a handful or maybe less if we just count COVID-related deaths. So thank God it was very, very, very limited number. But that few number is just a very big for a community that accustomed to burying someone within 24 hours with a lot of gathering and sharing and praying. That was very challenging.
Mm. Well, Imam Ahmed, thank you so much for calling in. Imam Ahmed is with the Maine Muslim Community Center. We are going to take a quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Naturopathic Health. Committed to treating the underlying causes of chronic disease, naturopathicme.com. And Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. Journalist Theo Padnos went to cover the Syrian civil war in 2012, but he was captured by an affiliate of Al-Qaeda and held for 2 years. Now he's published a memoir.
I really was persuaded that with the things I was seeing, I would never be able to tell to anybody, but they let me go.
Theo Padnos and the latest news next time on Here and Now.
Here and Now coming up in about 20 minutes at noon.
Americans abroad look home longingly because their fellow Americans are already getting vaccinated. Dual citizens in Mexico are not waiting. They're traveling home to the U.S. to get their first shot. They'll stay for the second and then return to their lives south of the border. I'm Marco Werman, privilege, mobility, and hoping for pandemic protection on both sides of a border. It's on the world.
And you can hear the world this afternoon at 3 o'clock.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on our program, how funerals have had to adapt during the COVID pandemic. Joining me, Jim Fernald with the Maine Funeral Directors Association and Doug Bibber with Bibber Memorial Chapel. You can join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post a comment to our Facebook page. Calling in now, Caitlin from South Portland. And Caitlin, I understand you also work in this industry.
Hi, I do. Yep, I've been in the funeral industry for a little over 13 years now.
What has the experience been like for you?
It has been challenging, especially in the beginning when restrictions were really, you know, put on us. You know, a lot of families were coming to me just feeling incomplete, like they weren't able to actually grieve. Traditions and plans were disrupted. You know, we had to really limit what we were able to do. Since then, it's gotten a little bit easier, but we've still had to really make a shift in how we do things to make sure people are safe when they do gather for services. And also accommodating people that are away, that can't be here for the services. So there's also been a big tech aspect that we've had to learn and troubleshoot. And there's just been a lot of trial and error to make sure that we're getting things done in a way where people can still work through their grieving.
Doug, this is something that you have thought and worked a lot about on, as well as the whole aspect of having to be technical experts in ways that you weren't before.
It was a very steep learning curve in my own personal experience. Thankfully, as I mentioned earlier, you know, a funeral director that Brad, who has given me good guidance, and we have a new employee, Jacob, and they've really been able to take on that technical aspect and make sure the glitches are few and far between, because you don't want something to occur in the middle of the memorial service or funeral service or celebration. And one of the things we've had to really keep an eye on is copyright issues, some things that people don't think about. Most funeral homes, all funeral homes, should be paying a copyright, in churches as well, to replay music. We pay a special permit fee to rebroadcast, so that we can put recorded music over the internet. And that's something people don't think about, and you got to have that discussion if we are having a Zoom ceremony, that issue is covered. So there are a lot of elements that aren't thought of but do need to be.
Well, Caitlin, thank you for your call, and good luck to you as we move into spring. Joining us now, Alyssa Martinet, who is an audio producer and graduate of SALT Institute at Mecca, now based in San Francisco. Alyssa, thanks so much for calling in.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Tell us about the audio project you worked on while here in Maine. The focus was funerals during the pandemic, correct?
Yeah, so I was at SALT a year ago in the spring of 2020, and I was interested in death care in general, so I actually started my project before the pandemic, and I was speaking to a lot of people in the alternative death care section, and very quickly, as the pandemic hit, I realized that the project was going to have to take a different course, and I started speaking to people in all aspects of death care about how COVID was impacting their work, so from hospice care all the way up to funerals and bereavement.
Tell us some of the most significant lessons you learned in terms of the impact of the pandemic and on how people experience death.
Yeah, so I think one thing that was interesting to me is that people who are working in the death care world, there's a strong focus on getting people to be comfortable with death and to feel okay with caring for loved ones and to just go through the process in a comfortable way. And I think as COVID hit, on one hand, it brought up death for a lot of people. As someone was mentioning earlier, it just kind of brings mortality to the forefront of people's minds. But on the other hand, it made death feel really scary because there's this illness that in the beginning of the pandemic, when I was doing most of my reporting, there wasn't a lot known about COVID. And so people were really afraid of death, which was kind of taking away some of the work. And I think some of the most significant impacts that I heard from the people I interviewed were just not being able to physically be there for people, whether that's in the hospice care world or at the funeral home when the funeral director is greeting families. There was a lot of discomfort in the beginning, especially when we weren't used to wearing masks and gloves and staying far apart. It felt really scary and strange for funeral directors to not be able to be physically close to people.
Alyssa, I really appreciate you calling in, and congratulations on completing the project. Alyssa Martinet, a SALT Institute graduate and audio producer. We're going to go now to Portland and Helen. Hi, Helen. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I'm sorry. I was reading. Unfortunately, I was reading American Fascist by the Christian Right and the War on America by Chris Hedges. And I forgot what my question. Oh, I was going to ask. I have this problem. I was in New Haven, and Yale had to stop burning their radioactive waste in town. So they went to a crematorium after they moved it to the VA hospital. Then they stopped doing that, and they started using the puppy burner. But as far as people went, when they used radioactive elements in them for a cancer treatment or planted implants in them, I was concerned. So I went to a meeting for the cremation, they had moved it to West Haven, of people. And I asked, what do you do with someone who has gone through radioactive treatments? Do you burn them and release radiation to the air? And there was somebody there from our state health department. And he said, I was concerned also about viruses that are heat resistant, that don't get burned up in the ashes. And I asked about that. He said, oh, no, no. As far as he knew, there was no viruses that never got burned up. Well, luckily, COVID, when I looked it up in January, is destroyed by temperatures under 170. I don't remember what the exact number was, but my oven goes to 170, and I was a little scared when it first came out. So I put my dishes after I washed them in the oven, and I ran to get some alcohol.
So, Helen, what is your question for the funeral directors about people who've had
about the safeties he uses and all this and all the scares, not scares, but people not knowing what to do to protect themselves, like take the vaccine, wash your hands 10 times over, don't touch anything.
Helen, are you concerned with the cremation and that it could?
Well, first of all, are they allowed to cremate people who have either sources of them or, let's say, have had radioactive diagnostics or treatment? And so they have these couple of the pharmacies are making now chemicals for pain that have radioactive elements in them.
Okay.
I could step in and answer that question.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Sure.
Go ahead.
As part of our family meeting, we, and if the family has indicated that their desire for final disposition
tradition is cremation, that we actually have to go through a list of care of their loved one and what they received, whether they have a pacemaker inserted, a port for other medication being administered, or the implant of nuclear material as a form of cancer treatment. And if there is that implant, then it does have to be removed prior to a cremation occurring. So those kind of medical devices and implants do need to be removed before cremation occurs. And the crematories today are at such a high temperature that there isn't any living matter that would be able to survive the cremation process. So as far as safety goes, it is a safe manner to use as a form of final disposition.
All right, Helen, thank you, and I hope that answers your question. We'll go to Limington now, and Joyce. Hi, Joyce, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for taking my call. I own Cedarbrook Burial Ground out here in Limington, and I'm finding the program really interesting. But I just wanted to not just put in a word for Cedarbrook, but for green burials, because people can hold services. We just, in the last 2 weeks, we've had two funerals here, and family was able to gather because it's outside, and we're non-denominational, so whatever service they choose is fine by us. But I think it's important to people know that the green movement is very strong in Maine. There's another green cemetery up in Orrington, Rainbow's End, as well. And it certainly is an option. And it's not to say that people shouldn't use a funeral home, because they definitely, 99% of the people do. But it's just another option for being able to gather in a safe, social distancing manner.
Joyce, I'm so glad you called in, and Maine Calling, we have discussed but the green funeral industry in the past, but or the movement in the past, but it has been a while. So let me ask you this. Do you find that because of COVID, more people are interested in a green burial?
Interestingly, I have already had about 9 people call me to come and see the cemetery once the snow goes. So that they can select their spots. And a couple of them have definitely, more than 2 of them, have mentioned that this has brought, of the COVID situation, has brought the thought of death more in the forefront. And they tend to be, everybody thinks that you're going to be 70, 80, or what years old to plan your funerals. Not true. A lot of people in their 40s, 50s, et cetera, are definitely thinking ahead.
Well, Joyce, I really appreciate you calling in. Joyce, and the name of your place is Cedarbrook, correct?
Yep, right. Cedarbrook Burial Ground, correct. Yep.
All right. Thank you very much. And Jim, you all work with people. I know, because we've had funeral directors on Maine Calling before, that most funeral directors today are willing to work with a family for any kind of burial or any kind of cremation they want, correct?
Oh, absolutely. We've worked closely, like Joyce was saying, with Rainbow's End up here in Orrington. That's a very close cemetery to us here for natural burial. But, we're caregivers. We want to help families to try to work through this end of life or death process the best way we can to make it meaningful to them. And if it's meaningful, that should present a good healing process into the future for them. So we want to help them and guide them the best we can. Of course, there's usually a lot of state guidelines that we have to abide by to point them in the right direction, I guess is the way to say that. But I really recommend pre-planning. If you have a certain question, to consider a funeral home a resource to try to help answer that for you.
All right. We'll go to Edie on Facebook, who writes, I loved Julie's contribution about patience. My husband died March 3rd, 2020, and there is still so much not yet shared or acknowledged to honor his passing and comfort one another with our community and for the family. Doug, this is a word coming up over and over, patience. It's hard.
It is, and it's one of the words my children do not like to hear. But it is, and I think patience is a perfect word to use in this context.
because we need to get through this time safely so that we can gather again, and we will. It just is going to take us a lot longer than we had thought, planned, or hoped for. But with the time and the vaccine occurring, we'll get there, and then we'll have some more work to do as survivors of loved ones that have died, and the professionals surrounding those grieving families, as we all try to do what we can to get them through, as Jim said, the bridge to living the new life that they have to live.
And Jim, I was wondering before we go, if you see any of the changes that you've made because of the pandemic as lasting changes, are there going to be more options in the future when people come to you? Will, for example, do you think people who live far away be incorporated into services with some sort of virtual technology?
Oh, yes, these changes that we're implementing now for web streaming or Zoom or whatever the medium may be, we've also made arrangements over internet with DocuSign and things like that. I see these staying with us into the future. All our families nowadays are scattered all over the world sometimes, so to be able to connect them to a memorial service that they probably couldn't make it home for, I think that's a huge deal, and I can see that going on and on into the future for sure.
Mm-hmm. And Doug, what about you?
I'll reiterate what Jim just said. Yes, the expectation of I think our families will have changed as to what we should be able to provide to them. And we have to be ready to provide that to them and to stay on top of the new options available to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jim Fernald, Doug Bibber, good luck to you all as you approach spring. I hope that you're able to get back to some sense of normalcy soon in your industry. And thank you so much for being on Maine Calling today. Doug Bibber is Vice President of Bibber Memorial Chapel in Kennebunk, and Jim Fernald is spokesperson for the Maine Funeral Directors Association and funeral director at Brookings Smith in Bangor. We had a few organizations mentioned today on Maine Calling, and those will be posted on our Facebook page. Today's sound engineer was John Keimel. This program will be rebroadcast tonight at 7. If you'd like to learn more about this program, listen to previous shows, or sign up for our podcast, you can visit mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, personal finance expert Michelle Singletary joins us to answer your questions. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.